Welcome. My name is Dr. Kenneth Sherman, Professor of Medicine at the University of Cincinnati. This is an IAS USA module on the screening for varices and prevention of bleeding. Today, we will be discussing the pathophysiology and portal dynamics present in the splanchnic circulation, the indications and methods for variceal screening, and the prophylaxis of variceal bleeding. We will start with a review of the pathophysiology and portal dynamics that are present in the splanchnic circulation. In this figure, you see a diagrammatic representation of the splanchnic circulation. The splanchnic circulation consists of the blood flow that arises from the intestines and passes through the inferior and superior mesenteric veins and joins the circulation derived from the spleen and traveling through the splenic vein to the point of the confluence of those three major vessels, which is then called the portal vein. The portal vein enters the liver carrying approximately 70% of the blood. 30% of blood is oxygenated blood that arrives into the liver from the celiac system through the hepatic artery. Splanchnic circulation is isolated from the general or systemic circulation of the body and passes through the liver, where substances in the blood are processed by the liver before entering the systemic circulation. In the setting of liver disease with fibrosis or infiltrating disease that might block blood flow through the hepatic sinusoids, the portal pressure begins to rise. The rise in portal pressure leads to a backup of flow through the liver in the splanchnic circulation. Initially, this increase in pressure is dealt with by the enlargement of the spleen. The spleen serves as a reservoir or capacitance vessel, but because the spleen is enclosed by fibrous tissue capsule, it cannot expand infinitely and eventually reaches a maximum size. As the spleen enlarges, platelets and other circulating cells are removed more aggressively from the circulation, leading to thrombocytopenia and to the development of neutropenia and mild anemia. Backup of blood flow through the superior and inferior mesenteric vein systems leads to engorgement of vessels and capillaries and increases the risk of the development of ascites. Over time, when the capacitance of the spleen is reached, the body begins neovascularization with the development of alternate paths for blood to move from the splanchnic circulation into the systemic circulation. The pattern of this is variable in each individual. This is part of the reason that the presentation of advanced liver disease with portal hypertension is not the same in everyone. In some patients, the revascularization occurs at the level of the recanalization of the umbilical vein, leading to a reverse of blood flow through the umbilical vein that typically is closed at the time of birth. This leads to the development of a caput medusae visible on the surface of the abdomen. In many patients, there is the development of revascularization and enlargement of the coronary vein. The coronary vein feeds a cluster of vessels present at the interface between the distal esophagus and the stomach, and the enlargement of these vessels leads to the development of esophageal varices. Similarly, engorgement of short gastric vessels leads to the development of gastric varices. In the next slide, we can see an endoscopic photograph of the distal esophagus, which has a series of large vessels coursing down its surface. These vessels represent the altered blood flow and the return of blood from the portal system through a venous system into the general circulation. These vessels enlarge over time, and as they enlarge, they become more thin-walled, eventually leading to rupture and quite significant bleeding, which is referred to as variceal bleeding. Variceal bleeding carries with it a high rate of mortality and increases risk of development of other complications of liver disease, such as hepatic encephalopathy. In the next slide, we can see evidence of the effect of the hepatic venous pressure gradient, or HVPG, on the risk of bleeding from varices. Studies performed in the 1970s indicated that there was an absolute level where it was likely versus unlikely that patients with varices would be bleeding. This level is represented as a pressure gradient of greater than 12 millimeters of mercury. It does not mean that all patients whose pressure gradient exceeds this will bleed, because that is in part due to the risk of and size of the vessels in the esophagus that thin as they enlarge, ultimately leading to bleeding in many but not all patients. This is illustrated in the next slide. In patients with cirrhosis, the prevalence of varices in various series ranges from 35 to 80%. Of those, 25 to 40% will manifest actual variceal bleeding. If a variceal bleed occurs, then 30 to 50% will die from complications associated with variceal bleeding within 60 days. Among those that survive, the majority will rebleed within the next year without some sort of intervention. For this reason, we will now explore the indications and methods for variceal screening. This is illustrated on this slide. The mainstay of screening for varices is the use of EGD, or esophagogastroduodenoscopy. All patients who have advanced liver fibrosis and cirrhosis should undergo EGD at varying intervals, as shown here. On the left side, we see that if a patient has no evidence of varices on their endoscopic evaluation, then a repeat endoscopy is indicated in 3 years if the patient otherwise has well-compensated liver disease, defined as absence of hepatic encephalopathy, ascites, or significant coagulopathy, or 1 year if decompensated disease is present. If no varices are present on that initial evaluation, then no beta blockers or other interventions are indicated. If small varices are present, and these are defined by their size as being less than 5 millimeters, and the patient has a Child's Class B or C, then the use of a non-selective beta blocker prophylaxis is indicated. It's important to note that in the United States, primary treatment of hypertension with beta blockers is generally performed with cardioselective beta blockers. These beta blockers have little or no effect on pressures in the splanchnic circulation and are not effective. Therefore, non-selective beta blockers, typically nadolol or propranolol, should be utilized. For patients with medium or large varices, those greater than 5 millimeters, one needs to evaluate whether or not there is evidence of high risk visible lesions that suggest a likelihood of whether the patient will have variceal bleeding in the near future or not. These lesions are called red whales. The presence of patients without red whales should require the use of non-selective beta blockers, as for those with small varices, and yearly follow-up. However, patients that have red whales present should be placed on non-selective beta blockers, but may be considered candidates for band ligation therapy. Band ligation therapy is an endoscopic procedure that's performed to eradicate the esophageal varices. Once band ligation is initiated, it is generally followed up at regular intervals ranging from 1 week to 6 months based upon the size of the varices, the risk of bleeding as assessed by the endoscopist, and the need for continued treatment to the point of variceal obliteration. In the next slide, we will look a little bit more at other options for prophylaxis of variceal bleeding. We have already talked about the use of the non-selective beta blockers and have talked also about the use of esophageal banding. An older technique is called sclerotherapy, in which a toxic sclerosant substance like sodium tetradecyl sulfate or sodium moruate is injected into the varices, leading to their obliteration. Studies comparing sclerotherapy to banding show roughly equal effectiveness, however, a higher rate of complications, including the development of distal esophageal strictures in patients who undergo sclerotherapy. In those settings, esophageal banding is indicated. In the setting of acute bleeding, however, sclerotherapy may be more effective in some patients. In some cases, patients require the use of a transjugular intrahepatic portosystemic shunt, or TIPS. TIPS is particularly indicated in the setting when there are high-risk gastric varices present. Gastric varices often arise either spontaneously or following the eradication of esophageal varices. Gastric varices are not amenable to band ligation or traditional sclerotherapy techniques and require the use of either a TIPS to reduce the splanchnic portal pressures or the use of a surgical shunt procedure, which is similar to TIPS, but leads to, again, a decrease in portal pressure following an open surgical procedure. Liver transplantation is ultimately curative of portal hypertension, as blood flow through the new liver is generally normal and is used frequently when other modalities fail in appropriate and selected patients. In summary, hepatic fibrosis leads to increased portal pressure or increased pressure in the splanchnic system. Increased portal pressure drives the shunting of blood, which leads to the creation of varices in the distal esophagus and, less frequently, in the stomach. High pressure and the development of thin-walled vessels leads to bleeding. Bleeding can be prevented by lowering the pressures in the splanchnic system or by eradication of the varices. This can be achieved by the use of non-selective beta blockers, banding procedures, or shunt procedures.